everyone. Welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We are live here in Long Beach, California with boarded veterinary dermatologist from Animal Dermatology Clinic in Portland, Oregon, and my dear friend and many of yours out there, the derm vet, Dr. Ashley Bourgeois. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Long Beach has been great.
Yes,
it's been a really nice setup. The attendees have been awesome, and I'm just so excited we get to talk about allergies.
Yes, we are too. We want to thank our friends at Blue Buffalo for supporting this great conversation, and it's nice at the current time of filming. It's nice and warm here in December, so we'll take that. Speaking of allergies and temperatures and all that stuff, I mean, this is what we're going to be chatting a lot about is some of the allergies. And I always find, too, Dr. Bourgeois, like, when I have the clients in the exam room, believe it or not, just trying to convince them that their pet has allergies. What are some pieces of advice you would give to GPs out there?
Yeah, and I'm a little fortunate by the time they've come to me, like they've kind of accepted it to some degree, but I still have clients who fight me on it. Like they'll be coming to see me for an ear infection and they'll mention like paw licking and I'll mention that can be a sign of allergies. Like, oh no, they're just bored.
Yeah.
You know, they got OCD, they're just bored. And so it really is just going back to the basics of these are common clinical signs that we see associated with allergies, paw licking in cats, over-grooming the belly, scratching the face, things of that nature. And also I think what's really helpful is just explaining that these tend to be progressive diseases. Like signs can be mild, we can probably be proactive and get ahead of them. But if they do become the dogs or cats who are all of a sudden dependent on steroids, who are getting infections, we're kind of behind the eight ball on what we can do to control them. So that's why working up allergies with simple things like diet trials, flea control, those things we can control can be really helpful.
Yeah.
But I just want all the vets out there to know we deal with that too.
Yeah.
Like it can be really tough. The other thing is if you give them an allergy med and they get better, it's probably allergies,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a simple thing just to rule out is how they respond to treatment.
Right, absolutely, which is always nice to have. But there are some misconceptions that are out there as well. What are some of them?
For allergies?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of times it's just that simple removal of things is going to cure them. So, you know, talk about like a diet trial. Like, oh, if I just take grains out, if I just don't feed them chicken, like then I've ruled out a food allergy, which we definitely know is not true and
right. Is
not successful as an elimination diet trial. See, the other thing is just not realizing that other pets in the household can affect the allergic pet. So I especially think about that with like flea prevention. Like, well, they're itchy. I have them on good flea prevention, but I have three other cats at home that are not on good flea prevention. And what we know about flea prevention is we're so blessed to have really great options in the isoxazoline. But I like to say none of these preventions put a force field around the animal,
yeah. Right?
Like we still have to control the population in the household itself. So we need everyone on good flea control. So flea Nile is a real thing.
Yes.
You know, even if it isn't just for the allergic pet, but for everyone else in the household. And then I just think being empathetic, you know, to clients, because allergies seem like they shouldn't be a big deal, but it's a lifelong, chronically progressive disease.
Yeah.
So just telling owners, like, I understand, like validating them, because I think a lot of times they're in doubt because they don't want to think their little fur baby has a chronic disease that now they have to manage. We just need to say, we understand, we've got really good things we can do to be ahead of this so that we can prevent your pet from having issues long-term.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on it too, when there's a multi-pet household, multi-pet, multi-species, maybe one dog is getting a medicated shampoo, but everyone has to be maybe a flea and tick preventative at the same time. What does that look like when you're talking to clients about that when dealing with multi-pet, multi-species households?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what allergy you're working up. But we just have to realize that there can be things that the other pets in the household do or get exposed to that might not bother them, but could bother the allergic pet. And the two main things I think of, right, because environmental, that's not going to have a huge implication,
yeah. But
it's definitely flea allergy and food allergy. Again, going back to for flea allergy, we need everyone. Yes, the indoor cats too, right? We fight that as well, where owners say, but they're always indoors. Like those pets all have to be on good flea prevention so that we can limit the exposure that the other pet in the household that we are working up is going to have. So the flea life cycle, we want to make sure we're using effective products and being consistent. That's the other hard thing, right, is actually remembering to give flea control to everybody. And then definitely food allergy. So the big issues when I'm trying to work up a food allergic patient is, are there other pets in the household? Can you be strict? What does that look like for you? So we have to make sure that they're not getting exposure to any other things that other pets could be receiving, whether it's treats, whether it's licking their bowl or getting into their food. So you have to see if they can be strict and separate all those pets. And some owners will. Yeah. Some owners will be like, we feed them separate. We're really like, the bowl is down, the bowl is not down. And some owners, that's really hard. If we have free feeders, you know, in the household, that's really difficult. If we have cats and they all just munch when they want to, it's kind of unrealistic to expect an owner to always pick it up.
Right.
So that's where, as long as the other pet doesn't have any sort of medical reason they need certain nutrition, it can be really helpful to put them all on the same diet.
Yeah.
You know, if there's not a reason that that cat needs a particular nutritional aspect in their diet, or the dog doesn't, like, I have many pet owners that will just put them all on the diet.
Yeah.
Because then whatever they're getting into the other pet's food, it's just the food they're supposed to get anyway.
Way easier that way too.
Yep.
Absolutely. What are some best practices for doing a food trial?
Making sure it's the right time for the owner. And that sounds super simple, but I do find sometimes that people try to force it when it's not the right time, right? We are here in lovely California in December. A lot of visitors for the holidays, right?
Yes.
So, like, is it the right time to start a diet trial right now if grandma and grandpa are going to come over, if we're going to have 30 kids in the household, and the dog or cat's probably going to get something? Well, keep them comfortable if it's not the right time, and then come back to it in January.
Right.
You know, or if it's like they're going to travel somewhere. So it sounds really simple, but I just ask owners, can you be strict the next 2 months? Because I think we forget a diet trial is a diagnostic test. And so if we're going to go through that test, you wouldn't do lab work when it's not the right time, right? So, like, if we're going to do that diet trial, that diagnostic test, let's make sure at the end we can feel confident that we have our answer, yes or no. So I like to just simply, like, ask, is this a good time for you to do it? And then just talking to them about the options and the importance of using prescription diets. So many times owners will say, but I've taken out a certain protein, or, well, I gave an over-the-counter allergy diet. And it's really important that they understand prescription diets, go through the testing to assure there's no other residues in the food. And we have study after study that shows, I have nothing against over-the-counter diets. There's great ones out there. They're not meant to be a diet trial diagnostic test.
Got it.
So it's saying, if we get through those 2 months of this prescription diet, this is why it's important, making sure there's no other residues in the food. And then at the end, again, we have our answer of whether they're food allergic or not.
Got it. Absolutely. I want to touch a little bit more about, you know, food allergy trials, because we have different ages that we're suspecting our patients to have a food allergy. They could be young, they could be, you know, adults and seniors. So when you're making that diet selection, what does that look like when we're chatting with the owners about that?
I'd say the biggest issue is growth, right? So a lot of times these diets that are done really well, that have nutritionists behind them, that go through the appropriate AFCO testing, you know, like blue natural veterinary diets, they're going to be appropriate for most of our young adults, senior pets. But the tricky part is those young ones, right? Especially if you're talking about like a large breed dog. If you see like a Great Dane that's 7 months old and you're worried they're food allergic, that doesn't mean we could ignore all the growth requirements that they have. So then you want to be really thoughtful to put them on a balanced diet that's actually labeled for growth. So NP, that alligator-based diet by Blue, would be one of them. That's actually labeled for growth. You can feel confident they're going to still meet those needs as you're doing the diet trial and making sure you're figuring out what's causing the otitis, the pyoderma, the pruritus, whatever you're working on.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really helpful. And when they're in a food elimination trial, and you just talked about it too, they have ear issues and skin issues. Is there multimodal therapy? Is it really, it's just as important now than it would be for anything else, but what are some suggestions that you would recommend when you're looking at dogs that are suspicious of maybe they have some sort of atopy in addition to food allergies? Because it can get a little confusing as a practitioner.
Yeah, really muddy.
Yes.
Really muddy. And I think that's, again, a misstep we make sometimes is to think food allergic dogs are just food allergic. We actually know a significant amount of dogs who have food allergies also concurrently have atopic dermatitis. Mm. So sometimes I think we put them on a diet trial, we expect them to get 100% better, and if they don't get 100% better, they're not food allergic, where sometimes there are shades of gray.
Yes.
Like you're a little bit of both. So maybe the ears do great, you know, when you switch that dog, or maybe the facial scratching for a cat does awesome when you put them on something like Blue HF. But maybe they still lick their paws as a dog, or maybe they still like lick their belly as a cat, and we could have multiple allergies. I have several dogs and cats who are the trifecta.
Oh, my goodness.
They're flea allergic, they're environmentally allergic, and they're food allergic. Oof. And just to back up to a point of that, when you're working at these patients, please make them comfortable.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I see we just sent home a diet, but they're like 10 out of 10 itchy and they're infected. We need to treat those infections. We need to put them on symptomatic therapy while we do the diet trial, because it can take a couple of months to see whether or not the food helps them.
Got it. And what's the latest research about using preventions, heartworm preventions, and things that are flavored. Maybe they need some compounded medications and they're going to go into a food trial.
Yeah, I will say there's a lot of different theories on this, but the isoxazolines, for the most part, are pretty novel protein, or they're hydrolyzed protein. So a majority of derms, and I'm not going to say all derms, but a majority of dermatologists I know, if they're just giving it monthly, or if they're on like an every 3 month product, then it wouldn't be an issue. But if they're just giving it monthly, it's such a low risk. And it's so important for them to be on good parasite prevention that I'm okay with them continuing it as long as they monitor when they give it.
Okay.
Of course, there's also new injectable options that are out there for preventatives too. So I think we have multiple ways to get around that, just depending on your comfort level.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you finding now with the onset of like social media and education, I mean, your podcasts and your Instagram stories are so powerful and helpful. Do you think that people are now more aware, more specifically pet owners, that food allergies exist and that they should be doing something if they're suspicious of pruritus in their dogs and cat?
I think that two things are true, and it's both sides of that coin.
Yeah.
I think that they're more aware, there's more veterinarians putting content out, but there's also a lot of misinformation, right? A lot of, and I think their supplements can be great, but there's some supplements that don't have research behind them, that aren't validated, that claim to take the place of a lot of these things.
Right.
So I think that both are true. And so I really just try to be open with owners if they come in and say, well, I heard this. I'm like, what did you hear? You know, I used to put a shield up and be like, oh,
yes.
Don't trust that. But now I'm like, well, what did you hear?
Right.
And then from there, if it's something that I don't really think has validation to it, I can take a step back and say, there's a lot of misinformation out there. Let's talk about what the research shows and then hopefully build that trust with them.
Yeah, I think it's a good lead-in.
It
shows that they're interested, they're curious, they want to know and help their dog or cat out.
100%. So, I think sometimes we want to put a guard up, but instead we should say the intent is good.
Yes,
yeah.
The intent is always good. And I always say, well, thank you for bringing that to our attention. Even if I'm back in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is clearly misinformation, but it's a jumping place. It's a place to start to kind of come together, common grounds. So as we're wrapping up, what's the best piece of information to give to general practitioners out there when we're especially struggling with food trials? Is there any good solid tip that we can give them?
I would say, one, again, make sure it's the right time. Two, talk to the owner about what they need to be successful. So I think there's lots of diets that can be successful for food allergic patients. I really ask them, like, what do they need? So, you know, is there a nutritional need, like they need to be labeled for growth? Are they fine with just kibble? Do they need kibble in canned? How are they going to give the medications? Like these simple things we kind of overlook.
Mm-hmm.
If they need something like, you know, I need a canned food to give the medications or it won't happen, then I'm probably going to lean more to something like HF that has a kibble and a canned option available to allow them to be successful. Or the big thing is chewing, right? Well, I need them to be able to chew on something and they can't do the things that are like non-protein flavored. Well, if I have a canned option like HF, I can stuff a Kong, have them freeze it, and then that gives them the option to still have that happen.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that we say, what do you need to be successful? Because some are just like, they eat kibble, no problem, and you know, we have lots of options. But if they need the canned, if they need other things to allow them to get through that diet trial, I'd rather know ahead of time than find out they have failed when I recheck them.
Yeah, absolutely. Great points.
Yeah.
Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, everyone, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure you follow her on Instagram, by the way, at the Derm Vet. Really great content, especially, I love your stories, because, you know, the before and afters are
it's pretty awesome. That's why Derm's so awesome.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Really is. Thank you. Thank you to our friends at Blue Buffalo for supporting this great conversation. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.